mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, ahead of a second town hall event next month, officials with the Findlay City Schools have released a new set of possible cuts that could be coming if their latest levy request is rejected by voters. Superintendent Andy Hatton joins us. Also this morning, it's been 25 years since a Big Ten team has claimed a national men's basketball title. Key member of that 2000 Michigan State squad talks about what the final run to a championship is really like. And we have details on April's events and programming at the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library. Sarah Clevidence will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, March 27th, 2025. Some of the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This has been an ongoing story in the news, in the national news. Measles outbreaks around the country, and Ohio health officials are warning that spring breakers could bring back the disease. Their warning comes after a confirmed case of the virus was reported in Ashtabula County last week. Doctors say measles has a long incubation period and symptoms usually won't appear until a couple of weeks after infection. And so students and families are urged to watch for any signs of illness as we travel about the country for spring break. Yeah, I can imagine that would be a bit of a concern. There's also a case now being reported in Knox County in central Ohio. The Ohio Department of Health says a visitor to Knox County tested positive for the illness that could have exposed others in the area. None of those who have been impacted, either in Knox County or in Ashtabula County, have been vaccinated, according to the ODH. So just something to keep in mind with respect to spring break and the measles. Can we call that your doom and gloom story today? Maybe this would be your doom and gloom story today. Because every day we have to have a something that we are worried about, concerned over, fearful of. You know, the society is doomed, we're all going to die kind of story. Here is today's doom and gloom item. If it isn't the fears over the measles, maybe it's this. Apparently, we are going to be overrun by weeds. A new study has found that insecticides could be helping certain weeds grow. Researchers discovered that plots of land, plots of grass that were treated with insecticides, showed higher amounts of mare's tail, a weed that is particularly troubling for farmers. Why would insecticides actually help the weeds, you ask? Well, one theory is that the spray is impacting beetles and ants, which eat the weed seeds and prevent them from spreading. And so it's the law of unintended consequences. Using pesticides more sparingly could allow weeds' natural enemies to help farmers grow their crops. So not just for our lawns, for our farmers and all of that. We're going to, the best of intentions, use insecticides, but it could actually be helping the spread of weeds. That's kind of interesting, this new study. There's the latest doom and gloom. Let's see, what else is going on in the world? Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. The founder of the Girl Scouts going to be the newest woman featured on the U.S. Quarter. Smithsonian American Women's History Museum and the U.S. Mint will unveil the latest coin in the American Women Quarters program today. The quarter features Juliet Gordon Lowe, who is credited with founding the Girl Scouts in the early 1900s. Famous Women Quarters program, American Women Quarters program, is 4 years old and has honored more than a dozen women, including Eleanor Roosevelt, Maya Angelou, and Sally Ride, the first U.S. female astronaut. So, pretty cool. Founder of the Girl Scouts, going to get her own quarter. So when I'm buying my next box of Girl Scout cookies, I'll be sure to pay in Girl Scout quarters. So get the full experience there, I guess. And a couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know. Well, this here, again, is another one of these doom and gloom stories. A new study is linking salty foods with depression. In a study published last week, scientists in China have found that excessive salt intake can trigger immune responses in the brain that can lead to behaviors resembling depression. They tested this, they tested this on mice. They said those mice that were fed with high salt diets displayed heightened anxiety and behavioral despair. I don't know how you track that in mice, but apparently scientists are smarter than I am, and they can do that. And so high salt diet linked with depression. Meanwhile, in a separate study, scientists from India have found that sugar-sweetened beverages could be reprogramming your body to crave even more sugar, which obviously is not good for us either. Regular consumption of sugary drinks were linked to physical changes in the intestines, which prioritize sugar absorption and could result in molecular addiction, the researchers say. So we're getting too much salt. We're getting too much sugar. I think the only thing that we can drink is water. We can drink water and just plain old unsalted soda crackers. I think that's what we... water and toast. That's all we're allowed to eat from now on, because otherwise we're getting too much salt and too much sugar. A steady diet of water and toast. That's all we really need. And how about some good news here? With all of that doom and gloom stuff in the news, I guess we should share some good news. If you are traveling this summer, this could be the year to take a Disney vacation. Disney World focusing on families this summer by offering 50% off of children's tickets. Wow. Disney World cutting prices. Imagine that. According to the Vice President of Customer Experience and Commercial Strategy for the Walt Disney Company, this is a first-of-its-kind offer. For 3 days or longer, half-price tickets will go on sale this week for visits between May 27th through September 20th, so basically Memorial Day to Labor Day. Guests who visit over the summer months will be able to ride the Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin before it closes for enhancements. So this is one of the things you might want to check out. I don't know if that's the reason why they're making the 50% off offer or not, but kids tickets half off this summer at Disney World. If you were hoping to take a trip to Disney, this may be your year. So there you go. You're welcome, America. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly cloudy today with a high in the upper 50s. Mostly cloudy tonight, low in the 40s. Some Ohio Republicans are pushing for a federal constitutional convention. It would be the first since 1787.
Ohio Republican State Representatives Reardon McLean of Upper Sandusky and Bernie Willis of Springfield are leading the charge in Ohio for the calling of a federal constitutional convention. The proposal comes under Article 5 of the Constitution, which sets rules for delegates. The goal is to impose term limits on federal lawmakers and curb government spending. Opponents fear unintended consequences and a drastic rewrite of the U.S. Constitution. 34 states must apply for a convention to be called, so far, 28 states are committed to that cause.
ONN's Jay Fox reporting. Habitat for Humanity of Findlay Hancock County and their many volunteers are going to be very busy this year.
Habitat for Humanity is excited to announce that we will be raising three walls simultaneously on our biggest build year yet, where we'll be building six homes to help house families here in Findlay and Hancock County.
Executive Director Wendy McCormick says the Raise the Wall ceremony will take place on Tuesday at the build site located in Habitat's new neighborhood in the 1700 block of Bishop Lane in Findlay. She says these will be the first three of six homes to be built by Habitat this year, and they will be the third, fourth, and fifth of 20 homes Habitat will build in the Crystal Ridge Addition neighborhood by the end of 2027. The first two homes were built last fall. Get more from Wendy about Habitat's busy 2025 in this story on our website. Findlay firefighter Dustin Rilley recently celebrated his 30th anniversary with the fire department. The Findlay Fire Department says it's indebted to Dustin, who was the initial driving force behind its cancer prevention program before it became a fire service priority. The fire department says, congratulations on your anniversary, Dustin, and thanks for your continued service, guidance, and friendship. See some pictures in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So in the past week or so, officials at the Findlay City Schools have released a new set of possible cuts that could be coming if their latest levy request is rejected by voters. They have a second town hall event coming up soon, and Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton is with us once again this morning. Dr. Hatton, thanks very much for taking the time. First of all, we appreciate it, as always. These additional cuts that you laid out about a week or so ago include some that had been on the table before. Why was it important to put all of this out there now?
Well, good morning, Chris. As always, thank you very much for having me today. We've been out on the road, you know, telling everyone about the May 6th ballot initiative, again, being back on the ballot for mm-hmm. Findlay City Schools. We've been getting the questions again, you know, hey, what if this doesn't pass? And
right.
So very similar to last September when the Board of Education read into the record, you know, here are the potential cuts, and then they talked about them in December. And then when the board enacted that resolution in January, that drove clarity around what we're looking at in terms of cuts for the 25-26 school year. One of them, you know, that had been talked about last fall but did not make that $6 million resolution was going to all-day kindergarten. So that was very much on the top of mind of many families here in our community. So we will be maintaining all-day kindergarten next year. It was just to try to continue to drive clarity around, you know, the gravity of the situation.
Yeah. And if the first round of cuts that have already been implemented or will be implemented for sure next year, if those are devastating, as you've described them, then I guess you could only describe these additional cuts as potentially catastrophic.
Yeah, you know, we're trying to be really optimistic right now, really believe in our community and what and how they feel about Findlay City Schools. You know, and we're really looking at this not only as an investment in the schools, but it's really an investment in our kids and in our teachers and in our community.
Certainly there is reason to be optimistic if you pay attention to what many members of the community have been saying online in support of the levy and so on. But obviously you don't want to count your chickens. You're having another town hall event coming up. Give us all of the details on this.
Sure. Well, we had a very successful town hall not too long ago at Glenwood Middle School. I mean, we had standing room only, over 200 people there. And it was great to receive questions from the community, and we're going to open up another online option for people to send in questions starting soon. The next town hall will be on April 9th at 6 p.m., Donnell Middle School, and we invite anyone out there that would love to come in and ask questions. We actually write down those questions, and we post them in full transparency in live time there in front of the group, and we stream it as well. Because we really want to hear from our community. And this town hall, again, is going to be on the topic exclusively of our district finances and our financial health and you know, how we can go forward to invest in our kids and our teachers and our community.
Is there likely to be anything new come out of this town hall? I'm just thinking for the benefit of those who were at the first one a few weeks ago. Would they likely be hearing anything new here, or are you trying to reach those who weren't able to attend the first one?
Yeah, really trying to reach those folks that live within our school district boundaries, because, again, the 1% earned income tax would not impact anyone that does not live within our school system and
sure.
our school district.
Right.
And, you know, Chris, I'm out. I do little office hours out in the community. I've been to Wilson's and Baker's, and yesterday I was at Panera, and I'm, you know, we're trying to get the word out, and I do fireside chats in homes, and I still come across great people who have awesome questions. But they, you know, sometimes at the end of the conversation, they say, gosh, you got to get this information out. And so I think it's just trying to reach that saturation level so everyone is really clear as to why we're on the ballot.
So let's kind of lay out some of, and I know we ask you this just about every time we've spoken on this topic, the potential scenarios. If the levy does pass, what happens then? I mean, again, we've talked about it before. The cuts that have already been announced will be implemented next year, next school year, one way or the other. But how soon, assuming that the levy passes, how soon would you be able to look at some of those for possible reinstatement or kind of analyzing where you go past the next school year?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the myths that we've been addressing recently is that we've actually not hit the full $12 million deficit at this point.
Right.
But obviously, you know, people understand how deficit spending works. We're trying to avoid that. So actually, at the last board meeting last month, or earlier this month, rather, we did enact the first just north of $1 million in cuts. And that was mainly the administrative positions and a few of our programming adjustments. And so then the board is going to take up in April and in May and possibly in June, you know, being very, I'm really proud of our Board of Education. They're being very meticulous in doing these cuts thoughtfully and not just wholesale engaging in those. So when we pass, you know, hopefully on May 6th, which is only 40 days away,
right.
early voting starts April 8th, which is 12 days away, we, the Board of Education is going to be very thoughtful and considering, because we know that to stabilize our budget, we must cut nearly that $6 million. But if there's anything that they can do to mitigate that impact, you know, that's going to impact students, I know that our board is going to be very carefully considering that.
And then on the flip side, if the levy does not pass, again, as we said, many of those cuts that would be on the table are already out there. You've announced what those could be. What is the timeline for deciding what ones of those will have to be implemented, or will they all have to be implemented?
Yeah, if we're faced with that decision post May 6th, we will absolutely have to move forward with the full cadre of cuts. Mm-hmm. And then I believe the board would be regrouping into the month of, you know, end of May and into June. To see about possibly getting back on the ballot in November, because, you know, we must stabilize our budget. And that's why we've been carefully sharing the facts around how we want our community to invest, you know, in our teachers and our kids.
Right. Let me ask you this, too, with respect to that scenario, because it has been floated that should the levy not pass, that the Findlay City School District would be into that area of distress where the state could come in and kind of take over management of the district's budget. Would that happen if this levy doesn't pass? I mean, what's the scenario there?
No, that's a great question, too. And you're right. We get that question quite a bit, which is also why we shared the potential of not passing this year. If we are unsuccessful this year, then we look at that phase two of cuts, which is around $4 million. So then that total gets to 10-ish. And then should we be on, because again, we must stabilize the budget. So I don't want to speak for the Board of Education, but I would assume they would go back on the ballot in 26.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we continue to be unsuccessful in generating new funding for our operating budget, then we would have to look at a phase three of cuts to get to that $13 million. We would definitely, I would assume, and our amazing treasurer, Pam Harrington, would be able to better speak to this, but I believe we would go from that fiscal watch to like a fiscal emergency,
mm-hmm.
As we navigate that third and final phase of cuts. And then, again, if our budget, for whatever reason, by then, going into 27-28 is not stabilized, then I do think we go into that that fiscal distress where the state would come in. Yeah.
So not there yet, but getting uncomfortably close, I guess would be the best way of putting it at this point.
I would agree with that. A little too close for comfort. Yeah.
Again, Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton with us this morning. Again, that second town hall event is coming up at Donnell. And what's the date again?
April 9th, okay. 6 p.m.
All right. April 9th, 6 p.m. We do have a link up for more information about the levy request at our webpage. You can go to goodmornings.net. Dr. Hatton, thanks very much for taking the time once again. We appreciate it.
All right. As always, thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
So aside from Major League Baseball's opening day, the NCAA basketball tournament, men's basketball tournament, resumes with the round of 16, the Sweet 16, four games today, four more tomorrow. It has been 25 years since a Big Ten team has claimed a national men's basketball title. And joining us this morning is one of the members of that 2000 Michigan State team, Findlay's A.J. Granger, who, of course, folks will remember also took Liberty Benton to state title in 1995 and currently serves on the Liberty Benton School Board. And A.J., thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Really?
Does it seem like it's been 25 years?
Absolutely. I am officially feeling like I'm getting old.
Did you realize, because I hadn't even thought about it, didn't even realize that was the last Big Ten team to win at all.
Yeah, I'm aware. You're aware when you have an accolade like that, I guess. But no, the last team that really had an honest chance was that Wisconsin team that had Kaminsky on it. I'm not sure how many years ago that was. It's quite a few years now, I think. But yeah, it's crazy.
Is it like the legend of the 74 Dolphins, whenever the last undefeated team loses, they get together and crack champagne? Is it kind of the same?
I don't know. I don't think that. We did have our 25-year men's basketball reunion this year, mm-hmm. Just a couple weeks ago, actually.
Yeah.
And it's always nice to get back and spend a little time with, you know, with your teammates and with those guys.
What do you remember most from that run?
Boy, you know, we had a little bit of success while we were there. We won three Big Ten titles. We won two Big Ten tournament championships. We went to the Final Four the year before and lost to Duke in the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State was at that Final Four, too. And then we're able to make the run then in 2000. And I got asked this. I was on a radio station up in Michigan last week, and I got asked that question. And the one thing I did remember was I had the only dunk in the national championship game.
Wow. There you go.
And so I ended up being on all the paper, you know, all the paper material that was out after that game because
That's cool.
Mike Miller's in the background, and he's kind of like in a midair pose, and I'm, you know, there's a picture of me dunking the basketball. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things where you watch the games and you hear the announcers say, I mean, these are, you know, great moments that'll be remembered forever. And I wonder sometimes whether the players, whether it's the stuff that happens on the court or if it's behind the scenes or if, you know, when you look back and reflect on it, if it's really, you know, the stuff that nobody sees that is the stuff that really makes the memories.
Yeah, when you're actually playing the games, I think a lot of the actual physical game material is subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that sounds weird to say that, but you're so programmed and you go through so many repetitions that you do a little bit of that subconsciously.
Yeah.
And so 25 years later, I remember, you know, now Michigan State played the game the other night. It was a 10 p.m. game. I think it was a 10-10 start. I know they left the arena at 1:40 in the morning. And then what I remember and what they went and did, and they talked about this, was they actually went to the hotel, got a film session in, and did a walkthrough on a taped floor in the ballroom there at the hotel. And that's absolutely what we did.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the types of things I remember.
Yeah.
I remember the stuff out off the basketball court that we did, things like that.
Yeah. Which actually leads to the question that I wanted to ask. What are these players going through right now? We're about to start that round, the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
It's really getting to be crunched out. I would think at this point, does it become kind of a grind? And you've gone through a long season. You've got the conference championship week, which is pretty intense, and then a full weekend, which is pretty crazy. And now here we go again. At what point does that kind of?
I actually think it's the opposite.
Really?
You find a rhythm, right? Mm-hmm. You leave your home campus at a certain time, mm-hmm. you know, Monday, Tuesday, whatever it is. You get to the site, you go to an off-site gym, and you practice. Every meal that you're eating is a buffet meal at the hotel, so you're eating better. At least, I don't know what they're doing now because they're getting paid. But you know, we always ate better because you always had a full spread meal at the hotel. There was always that rhythm of, here's a film session, here's the practice, mm-hmm. here's the scouting report, and you just fell into that rhythm. And the hardest thing to do is survive the weekend, the first weekend, because you're playing at some weird gym, mm-hmm. the basketballs are brand new,
yeah.
you're playing with referees that have never really refereed your games,
mm-hmm.
so everything just feels a little off. The
yeah.
gyms are sometimes half empty.
And at crazy times, sometimes.
Correct, and you're playing these scheduled games at crazy times. It's just, you're just trying to survive the first weekend.
Yeah.
Once you get to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, you feel like you fell into that rhythm a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing a team that, you know, they played New Mexico the other night, and they're playing a team that, you know, they have film on, but they've never seen anybody that plays in that league,
mm-hmm.
right? So you're playing a brand new team, so you just got to survive. And I think that I really appreciated falling into that rhythm. It is so scripted. I mean, you're taking your nap, you're going to your press conference, you're eating your meal,
mm-hmm.
you've got your film sessions. Everything is so scripted that you just fall into this rhythm once you get to this point.
You mentioned the players getting paid. Obviously, the game is much different now than what it used to be with NIL and the transfer portal. I think I read something the other day. There were like 200 or 400 players in the portal last year, and already this year there are like 1,700. Do you think about what would your trajectory have been different? I mean, you were there obviously at Michigan State that whole run, and those first couple of years you didn't see a whole lot of playing time. Would that have been something that you would have considered if it had been available at the time?
Absolutely. I when you're playing at a major program today, you're being taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Now every situation is going to be a little bit different, but I don't think I would have been making less than six figures as an NIL athlete at a mm-hmm. program like that.
Yeah.
And that changes things. And mm-hmm. I think it gives an opportunity to a lot more people to experience. You see kids now staying because of that.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for other opportunities. I'm not an absolute advocate. I think that there's a place for it, but it's kind of the wild, wild west right now.
Yeah.
As far as what it is.
It is.
And
yeah.
and I hope that they can form some sort of a structure to help with that.
So we mentioned 25 years since your team won. It's the last Big Ten team. Michigan State still in it. What are your thoughts on this year's tournament, this year's Sweet 16? Is Michigan State the Spartans a threat?
Well,
legitimate?
I do. I think there's a couple of things that you really have to have when you get to this level. Like, you got to have a really good foundation. They're deep. They've got really good guard play. Luck is always a little bit, you know, a part of the equation.
Yeah.
You have to have a little bit of luck.
Yeah.
You got to be healthy. You might have a matchup issue. Somebody might get hurt during the game. Somebody might be off. You know, I think that they're deep enough that they've got somebody that can step up at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really, I mean, we didn't shoot the ball the best, but we defended, we rebound, we ran the floor.
Yeah.
And somebody always stepped up. I mean, I averaged 9.5, I think, my senior year, and I scored 19 in the national championship game.
I think that was your best game of your college career.
I had 19 and 9.
Yeah.
And so there was always a game plan. You know, we, we never really focused on taking away the post. Udonis Haslem played for Florida, and that was myself and Andre Hudson's matchup that game. Mm-hmm. He had 25 on us.
Yeah.
But we knew if we took away the guard play that we would have a real honest chance of winning the game.
Yeah.
And so there's always a game plan going into the game. But you, I think there's a lot of parity, a lot of similarities between the team that they have today. They've got an explosive guy in Cohen Carr, right? Everybody talks about him. He's the Showtime guy when he's on TV.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've got two or three guards that are deep. They've got two or three big men. I mean, they got some big guys. There's three guys on that team that are seven-footers.
Yeah. It does seem like this year there is not one real obvious dominant team. I mean, no. Florida has been playing real well. Duke has been playing real well. Those are the two that I've actually gotten the championship game.
Yeah.
But, you know, of the 16 that are left, you could make a case, I think, for just about every one of them.
I agree. One of the other real positives that they have going for them right now is they're really a gel team. You know, they're unselfish. They play well together. You know, they're looking for the extra pass, and teams don't always have that. That's another similarity that we had. I mean, there was a time during the second half during the Florida game where those guys got kind of chippy with each other, and we all just kind of looked at each other and smirked because we kind of knew the game was over.
Yeah.
Like they had basically deconstructed, and we were in a position
that composure is a big
with composure.
It makes sense, especially again given the length of the season and the tournament, and you know it gets to be a grind. That's not the time to fall apart.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Fascinating stuff, and of course, never count out Tom Izzo in March.
No, he's been there as an assistant and head coach. He's been there 42 years now.
Wow,
isn't that crazy?
That is insane. AJ Granger with us this morning, kind of breaking it down, reflecting on that 2000 Michigan State team, last Big Ten team to win it all, and thoughts on this year's bracket as we get into the Sweet 16. AJ, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it,
Chris. Thanks.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Okay, get to the broken news this morning, and a number of dumb criminals in the broken news today, which is kind of fun. It's always fun, the dumb criminals. In one, and this first case, though, it is a group of dumb criminals that you wouldn't expect would fall into that category. You know, I mean, dumb criminals, and then there are people you wouldn't expect to do dumb things like this. From the International File, a British judge has admonished members of the Royal Air Force for vandalizing a statue of Paddington Bear. Who would vandalize a statue of Paddington Bear? 22-year-olds Daniel Heath and William Lawrence confessed that they were the ones responsible for breaking and stealing the statue. Earlier this month, the men were reportedly intoxicated as they made away with the iconic beloved children's character, the statue of the iconic beloved children's character. Said the judge in finding them guilty. I don't know what kind of punishment there was. Story doesn't say. But the judge admonished the pair, members of the Royal Air Force, admonished the pair, saying, "Your actions were the antithesis of everything that Paddington stands for." Oh, man. That's terrible. Well, you talk about a bad look for the Royal Air Force there. Elsewhere in the broken news, there's the group of car thieves that tried to steal 8 Corvettes. Did you hear about this story? The vehicles were taken through a cut fence at the GM assembly plant in Bowling Green, Kentucky. They tried to steal, forget going to the dealership or, you know, steal them out of somebody's driveway. I mean, just go to the source. They went to the assembly plant where the cars are made and tried to make off with 8 Corvettes. Police were tipped off to the heist when a local resident who lives near the plant spotted a man parking and then leaving a new Corvette that still had its stickers on, its window stickers on, which seems like that would be maybe the first thing you'd remove if you were stealing a car, but no. And then he went back and got another one and another one and another one. And apparently this guy said, well, this seems suspicious. And so he tipped off the cops. All of the cars were later found, including three that were set to be transported to Michigan before cops busted the deal and arrested a 21-year-old who has been charged with receiving stolen property, fleeing arrest, and engaging with organized crime. The perpetrator later said, quote, he would have been paid big if he was able to get the Corvettes to Michigan. almost made it. not a big surprise. There would be security at the Corvette plant. They make the vehicles. Kind of crazy. And then, speaking of dumb criminals, how about this? A bogus dentist in Houston is facing multiple charges after reportedly breaking a woman's tooth while trying to extract it. And the woman here is not totally blameless in the situation. Apparently, last September, she went to the home of Cesar Augusto Perez at an apartment complex for dental surgery. That should have been your first clue. You're going to a residential apartment complex for dental surgery. That's probably not going to end well. Probably should have known better. But apparently, the fake Dr. Perez reportedly tried to pull the woman's tooth with an ordinary pair of pliers, which broke the tooth and injured her jaw. An injury so serious she had to be hospitalized afterwards. Well, Mr. Perez, not Dr. Perez, Mr. Perez has been arrested now. But they got him on an unrelated charge of aggravated assault. Well, they got him on a whole different charge and then, I guess, realized that he was the bogus dentist that they were looking for. He is now charged with practicing dentistry without a license. And, are you ready for this? He is in jail on a hold from Immigration and Customs Enforcement. He's now on ICE's radar as well. Okay. Wow. That story is just all kinds of wow right there. And a couple of other items in the broken news this morning. Frida, which is a brand apparently of, they say they're a brand of mom-friendly products. Mom-friendly brand. Frida. They are now dropping a unique frozen treat. Coming up on spring and summertime, it is ice cream season. And so Frida has introduced, are you ready for this? Breast milk flavored ice cream. I kid you not. Frida breast milk ice cream. It's not made with actual breast milk, though, they say. Which seems like false advertising. But as they say, not actual breast milk. But it is packed with the same nutrients, omega-3s, lactose, iron, and calcium. I don't know, would you? Breast milk ice cream. You can get product details at their website, Frida, F-R-I-D-A.com, if you are so inclined. And moving on. Lastly in the broken news, a pair of otters are on the loose in Wisconsin after escaping from the Suamico Zoo and Adventure Park. Suamico, Wisconsin, I think is how you pronounce it. The otters are on the loose. Apparently, Louise and Ophelia found a way out of their enclosure during a winter storm via a small breach in the fence that they managed to enlarge just enough to squeeze out, and the otters remain at large. Officials from the zoo say tracks and overnight camera footage, tracks in the snow and overnight camera footage, show that both the otters appear to have enjoyed the winter snowfall, romping around the zoo, frequently sliding on their bellies and exploring nearby bodies of water. The zoo officials add that the surrounding area is safe for the otters to frolic and sleep in. They don't have any concerns necessarily about the otters' safety, but clearly they want their otters back. At least one of the creatures has been returning to the same area, and so they have set up traps, but this is just a comedy of errors. The traps have also attracted the attention of the local raccoon population. And the raccoons have accidentally set off the traps before the otters can get to them. So now the zoo is putting out raccoon-proof traps to aid in their efforts to, in the words of zookeepers, give us a better chance of success. You're hoping they get their otters back. You know, that's... Get their otters back. Such an adventure. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Your home for Cleveland Guardians baseball is WFIN.
Swung on, hit high, hit deep to left. It's got a chance. Gone! He hung a slider, and David Fry sent one to the porch and left.
The Guardians open the season Thursday afternoon at Kansas City. Pregame at 3:35 on 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Some interesting facts about America's pastime. With the opening of the traditional opening of the Major League Baseball season happening today, we thought we'd share some interesting facts about Major League Baseball. Did you know, for example, that during a typical Major League Baseball season, each game averages 90 to 120 baseballs used. Between 90 and 120 baseballs are used at every game, which adds up to more than 900,000 baseballs used annually, not including postseason play. So that's just during the regular season. And on average, a Major League Baseball lasts six pitches. six, that's it. And then they replace the ball on average. Before every Major League Baseball game, the baseballs are rubbed with a special type of mud known as Lena Blackburn Baseball Rubbing Mud, which is taken from a secret location in New Jersey. I had no idea. It helps pitchers get a better grip on the baseballs because they're all brand new. You got to mud them up a little bit. The first team to use numbers on their uniforms to help fans identify players and fans and statisticians, the Reading Red Roses, which I don't know if they were, they weren't a professional, a Major League Baseball, an MLB team, but they were the first, I guess, organized team to use numbers on their uniforms. I don't know the year. Among Major League Baseball teams, the Cleveland Indians were first to do that in 1916. Very first World Series took place in 1903, featuring the Boston Americans and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Speaking of Boston, Fenway Park, the oldest stadium currently used in Major League Baseball. It opened in 1912. That is the granddaddy of them all as far as baseball stadiums. This is another factoid that I did not know. While the ground rule double is a fairly common occurrence, everybody knows about a ground rule double, right? Did you know that you can actually have a ground rule triple in baseball? This occurs when a player attempts to use his hat to stop a ball on the ground or in the air. So if you've ever wondered if you could do that, using a hat is a penalty of three bases to both the batter and any runners on base. I did not know that. Now you know. And in 1957, the biggest trade in baseball history, the largest trade, the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Chicago Cubs switched their entire minor league teams. They just swapped minor league teams. As the Dodgers were preparing to move west and the Cubs were wanting a change, both teams decided to spice things up and traded their entire 25-man minor league roster. 1957. Kind of interesting. By the way, heading into this season, the Guardians have a 19% chance of making the playoffs, according to the odds makers. 19% chance of making the playoffs this year, and a 0.5 chance of winning the World Series for the Guardians. Reds, on the other hand, have a 14.6% chance of making the playoffs and only a 0.2% chance of winning the World Series. The Tigers have the best odds among area teams, 41.2% chance of making the playoffs and a 1.8% chance of winning the World Series. Overall, the Dodgers, Braves, and Phillies are the favorites to win it all this year in that order. Dodgers, Braves, and Phillies. Sarah Clevidence is here in the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library. Time to find out what's going on in the month of April. Find out what's happening here. Coming off of a very successful Community Read event in March. So,
yeah, it's still March, still technically Community Read month, but it always feels like it's just done once we've had the author here. And we so appreciate the community's support. We've had so many people reading and engaging with the book.
Mm-hmm. And like we mentioned last moment we had you here, it is just a terrific book and so tied into what many folks in the community go through on a daily basis and know very, very well intimately.
Absolutely. It's been great to tap into that agricultural side of our community.
Absolutely. And by the way, if you have finished the book, and I know we talked about this a little bit last month, but if you've finished the book, the Community Read book, and want to do more reading along those same lines, you have some suggestions for...
Absolutely. We have read-alikes available on our website, familylibrary.org.
All right. So we turn our attention to April, and you've got a number of events coming up that I know folks look forward to. So
we do. We have several patron favorites, so you're going to want to mark your calendar. First, a pajama party story time and a stuffy sleepover. So the stuffy sleepover program is actually May 5th, but registration opens April 1st. And this is always popular. So mark your calendar for that.
Okay.
The kiddos will come for a story time and then their stuffy gets to spend the night in the library.
Yeah, they don't sleep over, but the
kids
stuffy
don't,
does.
But the stuffies do. And the stuffies have a really great time while they're there.
So, and again, for those who have not done this before or not familiar, the kids come pick them up the next day and they learn all about the adventures.
They do. They get a whole photo album of all the things that their stuffy did in the library without
very
them.
Cool.
It's very,
very
fun.
Cool. What else is going on here?
So Spring Art Walk is always the first Friday in May, and we will have our community art show with Tiny Art. So on Tuesday, April 15th, we have two sessions of Tiny Art Craft Night.
Okay.
All ages. So that is 5 to 6 or 6 to 7. You do need to register for those.
Okay.
We'll also have a couple of days in April where we're distributing tiny art take-home kits. So you can just pick up a kit, take it home, make your tiny art, and bring it back for display during our art walk.
So when we say tiny art, what are we really talking about?
We're talking about something that's maybe 3 inches by 3 inch canvas. It's pretty small.
Okay.
3 or 4 inches. Yeah. And that you can paint whatever. Kind of going on an animal theme this year, but any appropriate art is acceptable, and we'll display those all during Art Walk.
Okay, very cool. Very cool.
It's a lot of fun. Our patrons really look forward to that one.
What else is going on in the month of April we need to highlight here?
Well, you know, Summer Read is not that far away, and of course we're hard at work planning that already, and a really important aspect of Summer Read for us is our volunteering program. So volunteers are students between the ages of 10 and 18 who will just help us run Summer Read in the library. So applications for that open April 1st, due by April 30th.
Okay.
We kind of think of this as a really great sort of first job experience even for those younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to work on their customer service skills. They need to, show up on time. They learn responsibility, leadership.
That's what I was going to ask. What are some of the responsibilities that the kids will be doing during?
So they'll help our patrons register for Summer Read.
Mm-hmm.
They'll answer questions that patrons might have about Summer Read. They'll distribute different handouts every week.
Okay.
They'll help with programs, setting up or preparing the crafts for programs, mm-hmm. And just all the other assorted little tasks that help Summer Read keep going.
Okay. And is there a time commitment that's involved with it? I mean, you know, how much, obviously there's a time commitment, but how much of one?
Sure. So we look for our volunteers to work one shift a week.
Okay.
Throughout Summer Read. And certainly we understand people might have a family vacation or a camp or something like that.
But, yeah.
You know,
that's kind of getting at, you know, how much this, it really sounds though like it's something that really anyone can do. I mean,
they really can. It's this great opportunity to get more comfortable talking to people, gain some confidence, you know, maybe work on some teamwork, working with a student, another student you might not know before you started volunteering together.
And what ages were they? Any teens or?
It's ages 10 to 18.
Oh, okay. So even tweens.
Even tweens, yes.
Well, then tweens.
Yeah. And we so value the work they do. We look forward to having them in the library.
Yeah. Obviously, also instills a love of the library and, you know, learning more about, you know, the library itself and operations.
Absolutely,
and
kind of yes.
So, yeah. Cool stuff. So again, registration for that and for the sleepover is...
And the art night all on our website, finleylibrary.org.
Okay, and those all open on the 1st, right?
I think art night registration is probably already open.
Oh, okay.
But the volunteen and the stuffy sleepover both start. Okay. April 1st.
Very good. And we've got a link on our webpage for more information about those. Anything else that we need to highlight?
Those
are the big ones.
Those are the really big ones. Okay. We've got, you know, all of our regular stuff happening to, you know, our slow flow yoga, writer support group, regular story time. So check the whole calendar on our website.
A lot of things going on. And if folks are looking for something to read, we mentioned follow-ups to the community read suggestions are up there. What else is new to the collection?
Yeah, we've got a couple of big authors publishing in April. David Baldacci is a big favorite amongst our patrons. He's got historical fiction work coming out April 15th.
Okay.
He's, you know, tends to be more of a thriller writer, so this is a bit of a shift for him. This one takes place in 1944 London.
There were a few things going on in 1944.
There were, yes. So there's
quite a time.
There's two displaced teens who survived the Blitz, you know, just kind of trying to make their way, and they get connected with the owner of a bookshop called the Book Keep. And so, you know, it's kind of their story of survival at this very difficult time in history.
Very good.
And Emily Henry is a very popular romance author. Our patrons love her. She's got Great Big Beautiful Life coming out on April 22nd. This one is recommended also for fans of Taylor Jenkins Reid's The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. It's the two main characters are both offered the opportunity to write a biography of a reclusive heiress who lives in this small island in Georgia. And, you know, they've got these very different personalities that go back and forth, and they're both sort of getting different stories from the person they're supposed to be writing about. So that sounds like a really fun one.
All right. Very good. A couple of ideas there for you if you're looking for a good read as the weather turns warmer and sit out and enjoy the spring weather and all that with a good book. Again, we've got a link for more information about everything going on at the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library. And Sarah Clevidence with us this morning. Sarah, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. Love for you to drop by and visit. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, what happens when a documentary filmmaker goes on a quest to deliberately be cursed by practitioners of black magic and the occult in some of the darkest corners of the world? Plus, we have details on this weekend's Findlay Food Truck Festival. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.